Welcome to The Storyfield. This is a podcast created and sponsored by the Allen Firm. This is Josh Allen, and I'm joined by Micah Petrie. I think you'll agree that life is complex, business is hard, and living a life of faith can feel complicated. We know it's discouraging when movement in your life or business or faith has stopped. Well, you're in the right place to hear some great stories of normal people just like us who will inspire you to move forward in life. So thank you for joining us today. We know you're going to be encouraged. Welcome to The Storyfield, and we are honored to have Jamaica Doss on the show today. You know, and if you live around the Stephenville area and beyond, you know Jamaica, and most likely you've had a great conversation with him. So Jamaica is a founder and owner of SPO. SPO is Slim Pickens Outfitters, and it's a specialty outdoor retailer located in Stephenville that has become recently more and more really well known across the nation. So a cool fact about SPO that I love this, Jamaica, is SPO is the first ever Black-owned outdoor gear shop in the nation, in Stephenville. So that's just a really amazing thing. Man, we are honored to be able to interview you today. So thank you for making time.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here. And when y'all sent the invite, I was stoked to just get on and chop it up with you guys.
That's great. Well, man, I want to kind of figure out how you ended up in Stephenville. So kind of tell us where you grew up, just about your family, you know, childhood, that type of stuff. And we want to kind of build out a timeline all the way to the opening of the store.
So, yeah, I grew up in Wiley, Texas, which is kind of like on the other side of Plano in the North Texas area. A family of four, my parents and then my siblings. My elder brother, Jadai, then me, then my two younger sisters, Francile and Arlene. I don't know, we'd kind of joke around of like, just from the names, like, I think you knew our lives were going to be somewhat interesting. I don't know if it was kind of like if my dad kind of took the boy named Sue theory to really heart and like, yeah, let me give them these different names and like build character and all that. But I think it worked, and it's been to our benefit. And now it's something that we love. We love kind of the uniqueness and I don't say like love like being different for different's sake. I think it's just we realize that we're different and we're comfortable in our skin with that. My dad is an immigrant. He immigrated from Jamaica when he was about, I think, 7 years old. So he came from a pretty big family, a family of seven. And, so kind of that connection it's been an important connection for me. And it's been something that has, kind of influenced whether it's my musical choice, even some of the things that I'm into with like my style and all that, it's kind of played a part. I grew up in Wiley, Texas, lived there all my life. Then when I lived there, it kind of reminded me honestly a lot like Stephenville. It was a smaller town. I graduated with like 350 people in my class. And we kind of used to say that like Wiley was a suburb of Plano, which was kind of in like a suburb of Dallas. And now my parents still live there, and it is just blown up. It's not how I remember it. And I think in some ways that's good. It itself just, it has kind of become this hub and kind of pours into Dallas, with, you know, kind of almost like bypassing Plano sort of thing. So, but kind of just going back to like me growing up, I've always, we didn't have a lot of, diversity in Wiley. So we kind of not necessarily like stuck to ourselves, but like there was a huge focus on community within family. And even kind of around the family with friends and kind of we call extended family, and so I think that played a really big part and an important part, because I didn't necessarily have a lot of like outside influences on what I liked. You know, I wasn't kind of like told, oh, you should like this, or, you know, you should really be into this. You should be feeling this. Like, I saw stuff. I learned about things, and if I liked it, I liked it. And so, it wasn't until I think kind of getting older that I kind of seemed to kind of run into this, kind of opposition of just like, wait, like, why do you like that? Or like, why are you into that? And so, but yeah, I credit Wiley. I credit, my family and friends, and kind of how I grew up, when I grew up, to definitely kind of who I am today.
Yeah. Man, thank you for sharing that. So have you had a chance to go to Jamaica? Like, does your family still have connections there as far as like?
So yeah, my dad's side, there are family that are still over there. I've gotten to go once. I always kind of say like, this doesn't really count, but it does count. We have plans to go back. I'd like to take me and my dad and my brother, kind of like a guy's trip, to kind of see where he grew up in St. Catherine. But we took we did the cruise route to Ocho Rios, and kind of like, you know, everyone's like, oh, Ocho Rios, like that's kind of the spot. And, but it was a cool and an impactful time even then, because we went to Ocho Rios, we docked there, you know, kind of the typical cruise scene that people get off and you have the day to spend there and people want to go and see the very touristy things. Well, I've always kind of adopted this kind of mantra of, we call, respecting the locals. And so like, even my wife and I, Heather, whenever we travel, the theme is respect the locals, which means we don't want to look like tourists. We don't want to come off as like touristy. Like, the goal is, if someone stops and asks us for directions, then we've respected the locals. Cause apparently to someone, it looks like we live there, or like we know where things are at. But so anyway, with this, it was really cool. We get off the cruise ship, there, you know, again, cause it's just big touristy port. You have a lot of people from the village just kind of selling their wares and goods and all that, and kind of, you know, kind of pushy, kind of in people's faces. And my dad, like, just automatically was in his element. The accent came out, and it was just kind of cool to kind of like, you know, sit back and like, I don't know, honestly, just kind of admire and just kind of be in awe of just like, man, this is what it looked like with my dad kind of growing up. And
was there a little part of you that was like, where did all that come from?
No. So something that the kids growing up, we'd always say like talk Jamaican. We'd like, dad, oh, talk Jamaican. Like, so we, because it was like I Love Lucy, right? It only came out when he got super pissed. Like, when he couldn't control it. And like Ricky Ricardo would just start speaking Spanish. Right. I remember one time I did something, and he was really upset, and he called me an idiot. And I was like, oh, a what? Idiot. And he's like, you heard what I said. And I was like, no, what does that mean? And he, like, I could see him getting upset, but I really didn't know what he was saying. And then I was, he called, like, I did this. He obviously didn't approve. Probably thought it was stupid. Made a bad decision. I was trying to figure out what he, and like, you know, my dad was, I don't know, like, we got spankings, real talk, and we're better for it. I'll put it like, yeah. And finally I was like, oh, he meant idiot. And so like, I got onto that, like, I would use that sometimes around my friends if I kind of want to code, like, just like, you know, EGI. I'm like, what do you say? Like, oh, never mind. So,
when it came out, we just gave everybody a new,
yeah, there you go. Copyright that. So when it came out, it was just really kind of cool to see him in his element. And what we got to see, and I think the Ocho Rios and that we got to see was different than from what the other tourists got to see, because he went and just started talking with this guy, kind of connecting. And then this guy took us on a tour, not of like the brochure Ocho Rios, but like, he took us up in the mountains, kind of where the slums were. And it was beautiful. Like, he took us to kind of to the real people. And I really, really, really enjoyed that. And so as we're touring through kind of up the mountains and kind of seeing these little, I don't want to say like shanties, but you know, like these shacks and these houses, some houses were kind of developed with extra structures and others are just like, you know, pieces of tin put together. It really kind of gave me definitely appreciation. It was, there was this connection that was there. And then it started raining, right? Which is beautiful. Raining on the side of this mountain, and everybody, at least up in the mountains, they have these, you know, these big vats where they do water recycling, and that's how they get their water. And so, it was just really, really cool to kind of say, okay, down at the port, you have this one kind of version of Jamaica that is really picturesque, right? And then you have the real Ocho Rios, where the real people are up there and where the struggle's at. To me, it's vitally important to know the struggle's there. So I think when it does happen, you know, you're not just totally just kind of, you know, hit out of left field.
Yeah, man, thank you for sharing that. And I like the idea of respecting the locals. And that'll be something that I feel like I'll take with me. That's just a pretty cool way to approach, you know, traveling in a different country and just being.
Oh yeah.
So thank you.
So we even do that at the shop. We've got a t-shirt series called the Respect the Locals.
Oh, good.
And it's, yeah. So, good. Yeah. You take that mindset anywhere you go.
That's great. Well, so graduating high school, what made you want to choose Tarleton, or what made you end up at Tarleton? Did your older brother come out to Tarleton in the Steamboat area?
No. And I laugh at that question because it was the exact opposite. So we're kind of a Howard University legacy family. So if you don't know what Howard, or if you aren't familiar with Howard University, it's a historically Black college and HBCU. Kind of people refer to it as the Black Harvard. I mean, you've had so many talented Black men and women come from there. And so my mom went there, my grandpa went there, my grandma, my aunts, my uncles, at least everybody, like, you know, one person in a generation just went to Howard. And that was just kind of what you did. And not to say like it was kind of expected, but you know, my mom was very proud of her alma mater. And so my brother went to Howard. And so I remember, well, it's DC. That's where my mom grew up. So we've always had family there and I've always gone there. I dig DC. I love DC kind of for the style, for the food, you know, for the culture there. But it's also, you know, it's DC, like it's the city, you know, like there's definitely, you know, the street kind of element to it. And so we're not from that. We're from Wiley, Texas. And so, there was not, I would say like a culture shock, but there's adjustment every time we were over there. But my brother went there. I remember when we went to DC to tour the campus. I mean, you know, there's just thousands, not millions of people in DC. And I remember this one time I saw this person get hit by a car. Dude got hit by a car. The car just drove off. And then like all these people kind of surrounded him, and then traffic just kind of kept moving. You know, and I was just like, this is pretty gnarly. Like I don't know if I'd really want to be here. Not to mention, and kind of the biggest thing. So my brother went that route because he wanted to be a physical therapist, to follow my mom's footsteps. I was really into animals, and specifically horses. I loved horses. So like that was kind of my identity kind of back then. I guess you could say I was into skating. I loved to play ball. And I loved horses. So it wasn't really this big mix, right? But every year for my birthday, my parents would take me and the kids or my siblings to the circus and the rodeo every single year. And so it would just kind of really kind of cultivate that love for horses for me. And then my dad would also take me to like the local livestock show. Because I kind of thought it was like the zoo. I do remember like sitting on his shoulders, like just looking at over in the pens of the animals. So yeah, that's kind of how I guess kind of like the difference to kind of between me and my brother and like kind of where we went. But like with me in high school, I didn't make my high school basketball team, which was like, it was never not an option. Like there was a couple of us and we were just so good at playing ball that like even before we got into high school, we did AAU for several years. And it was just like this, like it was like the basketball team. So like for whatever reason, I didn't make it. I was like never not planning to make it. And so like, I mean, I really was stunned. It's kind of like, what do I do? And really kind of like, who am I now? Like, I mean, and so I kind of went back to some of the things that I really loved to do. And one of those was animals. So I got into FFA and loved it. I mean, my only regret from my 4 years of high school was not getting into that sooner, because I loved it. I still could compete. I was competitive. I showed hogs. I love showing hogs. I love the moment of kind of like getting in the ring and kind of performing with this animal that you've trained, or I guess if you did it right, you trained, and like, you know, you'd show up and people would, at the end, you'd get not a trophy, like a belt buckle, like a legit, and then money on top of that. It's like, what? Like, this is, you know, like AAU, it's usually the other way around. Like, you got to pay all this money. Yeah. And you still might not win. So like, that really kind of that informed and really influenced me, and that's how I heard about Tarleton and heard about the equine science program. And I was like, okay, this is, you know, I told my parents and they were supportive. I'm sure they weren't surprised by then, but again, I kind of back to just, I think our names and kind of like how it didn't like force us to be into different things, but I think it was just kind of who we are, and we didn't necessarily kind of fit the mold or the status quo.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know you showed animals in FFA. And I mean, I've heard the same thing about FFA, just a fantastic organization and just the leadership, but what responsibility development and character development, just in taking care and showing and doing all the shows. I mean,
oh yeah. That's pretty neat. My wife, Heather and I, we have this ongoing kind of competition of who is better. I ascribe to the school of thought that, like, you know, it's all about the rings. So like, I've got more belt buckles than she does. But she says she has more ribbons. And I was like, ribbons is nothing. Like, you know, you can show up now and get a ribbon. She was like, well, my county was less affluent. So like, there were a couple of times where they couldn't afford, this is her saying, a couple of times they couldn't afford belt buckles. It's like, you know.
So she's saying it counts as much as a buckle. Yeah. Yeah.
No, the buckles are,
yeah. Right, so I gotta ask you something, because my high school didn't even have an FFA. I'm in South Houston in A-Leaf. How do you show a pig? I mean, literally, I would go to the Houston livestock show and then pigs would just be laying there on the ground. I know people that have pigs as pets. Can you actually train them to like leash and halter and all that kind of stuff?
Well, so for us, like I wasn't trained. Like, I just did it. Literally, I had this little baton and like a number of taps is where I'd like. So like one tap would be turn left, two taps would be turn right. A tap on the top of the head is to stop. I could scratch his back with the baton and he'd stretch out. So it's really interesting. Again, I just think it's funny. And I guess this is where you get into life and kind of like the gray areas of life. I'll tell you this. So one of my uncles, he used to fight dogs. It was not good. It was totally illegal.
Right.
But that's what he did. So I didn't condone it, anything like that. But something I did notice is that like they have these dog sleds that you can put weights on and you strap a harness to a dog and they pull it. And now nowadays they have competition for that anyway, just to kind of build. I don't know, Micah, maybe this is something you might want to add out. We'll see. I don't know. But anyway, I saw that. And when I started showing hogs, my thought was like, okay, what if I could build a weight sled for a hog? And because how you show it is, I mean, you just spend time with it. You've got to gain the hog's trust.
Right.
And you've got to take it out like for walks, and not like with a leash. Like it's just you, like that hog needs to trust you to just essentially like literally kind of like follow you, so that when you are in the show ring, you're doing very minimal, you know, you're not like whacking the hog with this like this bat or this stick. It's just like little touches, and right, the hog knows what to do. So my thought was like, oh, I wonder if I could do this. Well, there's one thing, hogs stress out really easily. And you see sometimes it shows, and especially it shows, hogs are known to stress out so bad that they just kill over and die. Because it's such a new environment. There's so many, there's so much going on. Right. They just kind of like, it's like sensory overload, and like they just kind of kill over and die. And so I was in FFA, so we were in shop. I had this idea to kind of build this weight sled. Me and I remember my buddy Tyler, we built it. And the hardest thing was to kind of get the hog to pull it. So like I had to, it was, I think, several weeks of just putting like a dog harness on the hog, right, and get it used to that and walk it around. And then, but eventually I got him to pull, I got her to pull, the sled around. And I think it definitely, like, it was like this hog, she was beautiful. She was filled out in all the right places, cut in all the right places. And it was my first time showing it. So that's what I was saying. Like, I felt like I was back at an AAU tournament. Like the hype, the pressure, the environment, like, it, I mean, it's competitive. And like, to know that like, oh, I could still put in the work and it shows here and it's evident, which that's what I loved. Like you said, in Houston, you can see it in any show. You can tell the people who spent time with their hogs and not. The ones whose hogs are just going crazy,
right?
Those are the people that are like, oh, you didn't really spend time with your hog. The ones that like can just, because their hogs are so smart. I mean, they are so incredibly intelligent that it's just like, well, you know, you've got to learn how to kind of, again, kind of cultivate and shape their intelligence. And then it worked. And it can work for you and literally pay dividends. I mean, people make a very, very, very good living breeding and showing hogs.
Wow, that's great. So when you came to Tarleton, were you in the like animal science, like in the ag?
Right. Yeah. Animal science was my route that I pursued. And then with the focus on equine science, you know, I've loved horses ever since I could remember. I did everything I could to be around horses. My first job was at stables, and I muck stalls. That's what I did. And I loved it. I think one of my the best jobs I've ever had, because it was very simple, and like, I mean, it was hard work, but like I knew what to do. At the end of the day, I could look back and like see what my work did, you know, see the improvement, and I got to be around horses, so I loved that job. I remember I'd take the bus, like from high school, and have the bus drop me off at like at this ranch that I worked at, and so like. So yeah, when I came to Tarleton, just again, anything I could do to be around horses. So my very first job here was for the Tarleton Rodeo team.
That's great. I mean, I love how God weaved that just delight in animals and the horses into you. And that's been a big part of your life. But how did retail and how did, yeah, how did, so that seems to be just a different lane. When did that come in? Was that all kind of going on?
What are you talking about, Josh? That's totally normal. Horses and sneakers and streetwear. It's, you know, it's point A to point B to point C. People ask me all the time, especially at the shop, you know, like kind of how I got here and like why I am here. And I tell them Tarleton, and they, if you see me, you know, I'm not the smallest person. They're like, oh, you came to play sports. I was like, no, I wanted to be a horse trainer. And like, oh, cool. So like, how did you get into this? I said, well, I graduated with a fashion merchandising degree. And then they're, you know, puzzled, like, what? It's like, it's a pretty, like, I guess it makes sense to me. I came to Tarleton, started out with animal science major with this focus in equine science. Little backtrack, both my parents' moms were seamstresses in their own right, and my mom's mom, my grandma Francile, she was a home ec teacher and a seamstress. And so when we'd go to her house and stay in the summers, and really we'd stay with both my dad's side of the family, His parents, my grandma, we call Ma and Dada, they were in this small town in called Dover, Florida, and that was where the farmer's at, and I'd stay there half the summer. And then my mom's mom was in Miami, actually specifically Dade County, which it is, I don't think it's anymore, but it was at one time and for a while, one of the most dangerous counties in the country. So again, these conflicting cultures, right? I'd go stay on a farm for half my summer, and then we'd go to the streets for half the summer, and you know, like playing in the yard, like, you know, not going out in the street, like, you know, like just gang activity and all that was prevalent. What that taught me was, oh, like these things could kind of, since not say coexist, but like there was space for both. And so like I loved my times there on the farm, and I love my times there in the city. And so anyway, with my grandma, she had us, she would do summer school, and we'd have to go with her in class to summer school. And so she'd do these kits, she'd make these sewing kits for her students. And so we were there, so we would help with everything that she did. So we'd help make these sewing kits. She had us promise her that we would learn how to sew, because she said every person needs to learn how to sew, both men and women. Like, you never know when you might be in a situation where you need to pull out a needle sewing, whether it's a job interview or something. I've heard like some of these gnarly like paratroopers, they sew their own stuff. And so like it's really been interesting to kind of see how many people are kind of really kind of into sewing. But anyway, I promised her I would do that. So I'm at school, I'm in equine science, right? And I love this. However, there's one, some people would say a minor oversight. I never owned a horse. I always wanted to be, I always were around him as much as I could be, but I never owned a horse. So I had this this advisor, his name was Don Henneke, just this old cowboy called Dr. Henneke. And he was my advisor. He sat me down one day, said, you know what, I'm never going to tell a man what to do with his life. He says, you're one of my best students when it comes to like kind of the knowledge. And it kind of reminds me of that scripture, right? Knowledge puffs up, but love edifies. He's like, but you really don't have the experience. And even though this is a university and this is a degree, this industry, the horse industry, is a degree about experience. No one's going to trust you with their $75,000 investment if you've never had the experience of being around horses. And so he said, I'm never going to tell a man what to do with his life. I said, but I like you, and I would encourage you to have just a backup plan. So I remember leaving that meeting, I was kind of like, oh man, like, what do I do? Kind of same thing with not making my basketball team, right? It's like, well, shoot, I really love horses, and this is what I wanted to do. But like now, like, well, what do I do? Like, you know, kind of a who am I sort of a thing. And I was reading the catalog of stuff to take the next semester, because I was still going to take my equine science classes. And I saw this one, it said intro to clothing construction. And I read the basics, and it's like kind of just learning the basics of clothing construction. It's like, oh, I can make good on my promise with my grandma. So I took that class the next semester. I was the only guy in the class, which some guys I would probably say like, oh man, I love those odds, right? That's a good ratio. Like, it was miserable because just, it was not miserable. It was interesting to just see the dynamics like between women. It's just kind of crazy. And especially when you're talking about kind of like, you know, fashion and kind of the way they look and all that. At the end of that, in fact, I have it right here. This is what I made. So, and I know this is going to be a podcast, so this is it's like a placemat with Fat Albert backed on some like plaid backing. I got it from one of my old jeans, FUBU. I think they did like a Fat Albert collection. That was the very first thing I made at the end of the semester. And again, I mean, it ain't the prettiest thing, but the fact that I made that with my hands,
yeah,
the fact that like I, and that started this kind of love hate relationship with me and clothing construction. Then that kind of led into fashion merchandising, because that was the actual like course kind of course direction when I actually did switch over into family and consumer sciences with the focus on fashion merchandising. And so by the time I graduated, I had a minor in animal science and a major in fashion merchandising. And I'd worked at several, I'm a sneakerhead as well. So I'm really into sneakers. So I've always said like what I collect, like my passion is collecting, what I collect is art, my art is sneakers. And so I've always been really kind of into that culture. Honestly, not so much anymore because it's I feel like it's kind of deviated from, I don't know, maybe I'm a purist, but I think it's just kind of been so overinflated, overhyped, that's kind of like, oh, this, it's not really fun anymore. People are kind of losing the story behind it. So yeah, that's kind of how kind of made all that. And then again, when I'm into being into skating, you see the sneaker culture influence there. Being into streetwear, you see the skate culture influence in streetwear. Being into hip hop, you see like all of these things, like it might not necessarily make sense, but like when you kind of get down to the subcultures, you see all the different influences there. And really once something that I definitely noticed was all of the things that I was into, whether it's econ science, whether it's skating, whether it's streetwear, whether it's sneakers, like the outdoor industry influenced all of those, because the outdoor industry also pulled influence from those places. So like, even when I was skating, even though I was collecting sneakers and all that, like I was familiar with these kind of storied and these reputable brands of outdoor wear and outdoor gear.
So yeah, so at some point was there do you remember when the time came where you're like, man, I would love to start an outdoor gear shop? Was
yes,
there a clear moment?
I do clearly remember, because that wasn't how it started. Never.
Okay.
It was like okay. I thought I was gonna open a sneaker shop. Like that was my thing. It was like, okay, I can do this. The longest, my most tenured job that I had in Steamville was working at Footgear, which is the local sneaker shop there. With one of my mentors, Matt Greer, everybody calls him Red. So like I thought like, okay, like I know this industry now, I know it well enough, I'm gonna repeat this somewhere else. But it was, I did remember having like, we started the company with a business partner, who came to me and was like, hey, like I'm thinking about doing something and I'd like you to be a part of it. Like kind of, what are your thoughts? And honestly, it could have been him. And it might have been him of like to have the idea to start the actual outdoor shop. For me, I just knew that like I was going to do like specialty retail. Cause like, and when I say sneakers, it would be sneakers and most likely skate and also apparel, because it's all kind of mixed in. So like it wasn't that far, I think, a leap. Because again, like where the influence was, it all kind of came from that same place. But the specifics of it being like outdoor, we're involved with our college ministry, and we'd go to mission trips every spring break. We'd go to a different state and we partner with a local community and several local churches within that community. And I love that, because that really kind of gave me this kind of understanding of like community, how the church ties in, how it should be serving, mentoring, pouring into the local community, and the impact that can make. And so then also in the summer times, when I was still here in school, we do international trips. So like my friends and I, we'd always kind of have this running joke of like, because there was never really a place in Steamville to kind of get gear, you'd always have to, whether it's Metroplex, whether it's Dallas, or whether it's Fort Worth, whether it's Austin or Houston or wherever, you'd have to go other places to kind of get the gear that you'd need for more so the international mission trips, but also some of the national ones as well. And so we kind of had this joke of like, man, one day someone's gonna really kind of catch on, open up an outdoor shop here and make a butt ton of money. And so I always joke like, the joke's on us, because we opened the shop, but like we have not made a ton of money.
Yeah. That was kind of segues into a question I was curious. So you opened, and it's been 4 or 5 years, is that right?
Four years.
So hindsight is always the best teacher. So looking back, What were some of the biggest challenges? I mean, in to open something, and y'all did it from scratch. So what were some of the biggest challenges that you could, that just kind of come to mind?
You know, I think like one of the biggest challenges, and money was definitely one, but I think, let me say something to that is because I hear it all the time of like people saying, oh, I have this idea, but like, I don't have the money. Now it is definitely important. And I mean, it's critical to have capital to start it up. But I think it's no less critical than some of the other things that you could be doing while you're trying to kind of build up that capital, right? So like a business plan, doing kind of pitch things, kind of doing your research and data of like, okay, like where, kind of identifying this problem, and then like, hopefully you would have a solution to this problem. Is this a viable, first of all, is this a viable problem? Secondly, is this a viable solution to the problem? But something that I definitely thought, I was like, wow, I kind of bought in this lie so long, is that like, there are people out there that are willing to help. They're not necessarily gonna show up to your doorstep. You've got to put in the work to build relationships, to talk, to ask, but there are people that they might not necessarily have the best idea, but they have some, you know, they have some income that they could put towards investing into a good idea, but they don't have time to put in the work, enact that idea, and see it come to fruition. So like, I think a big thing was like really kind of understanding what value we brought to the table and what value like our investors brought to the table. I would say that that's definitely like a challenge. And again, but it's not impossible. But I also think, man, just retail. Retail in a smaller town, again, we say specialty retail. That was a big challenge. Trying to do something that had never been done in the place that we were trying to do it. And I think also the reasons we were trying to do it, you know, we were Christ-centered and mission-minded from the jump. So like, you know, we were in that town. We stayed in Stephenville because we felt God calling us to stay in Stephenville. And I know that because I had a Jonah mindset. I wanted to leave Stephenville. Like I was done with that town. I was done with the people there, not individually, but kind of collectively. Like by then I was at least pursuing my wife. We were engaged. My wife is white. I'm not. I'm black. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, is this a good area even for that to happen? Not even kids, just that. We had friends that were involved in ministry, doing ministry other places, and seemed like some really cool opportunity. And I was like, oh man, you know, I want to go and do that. So we even went and visited those places. And I remember my prayer was basic. Like, God, I don't want to be in Stephenville. You know my heart, you know this. If you open up a door where I can just start working at a gas station, at a movie theater, at a restaurant, somewhere, just like literally, I just need one job offer, we will move. And we went to Louisville, which was awesome. Love, 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 love the environment there. Louisville was really, really cool. Went to Nashville, Tennessee. Loved that area. Super, super dope place. Atlanta. We went to like these places and like nothing was happening. We were visiting with friends, visiting with people in the churches, making these great connections, and nothing came of it. And I'm just like, all right, God, like maybe you didn't hear me. Like what I meant was
Stephenville it is.
Right. No. And like really I had this Jonah mindset. I was like, you know, man, forget these Ninevites. Like, you know, like, you know, these are busters. Like, I'm done with them. I don't want. And when I thought about it, why did I want to leave? Like, I wanted to leave because I didn't feel like there was a community there. Like, because, and I was never like not liked. I felt like, I think loved and encouraged. I just didn't necessarily feel like connection. I didn't really necessarily feel fully understood. I didn't fully feel, I don't understand, like safe, like I was in danger, but just kind of like, I don't know, when I go to these other places, like it was just a different feel. And I really enjoyed it. And I really felt the Spirit leading me like, well, why don't you stay there and build that? Mm-hmm. Or really more so, that's why I want you here to stay and build that. And it is something that's been tough, but when I look at it, it's like, okay, all these other places that I might've liked to go and I really enjoyed, like those weren't always like that. Someone had to cultivate that mindset. Someone had to cultivate that culture. Someone had to build that community, or if the community was there, give it a place for people to meet and gather and be able to kind of know, direct, and encourage each other. And again, for us, this wasn't, we weren't just like outwardly, you know, like, you know, heavy evangelistic and all that. Ours was by relationships. That's how I, that's how I came to know, appreciate, I think kind of be convicted with the gospel, was by relationship. It wasn't by this just huge, just heavy moment, you know, kind of something I would say, like, I grew up in the church. I was there a lot, almost all the time, but I never really saw myself as growing up as the church. And once I realized that, that's a mind change. That's a heart transplant. And so, but I always say, like, you know, I never had this crazy horror story. Like, if God had pursued me from my youth, and for, like, you know, I give him glory for that. So I didn't have this crazy, crazy horror story testimony. And I think also something that I kind of relate that to is, like, well, then, like, with us trying to do this with SPO, it didn't need to be this, like, crazy abrupt, just, you know, nope, I'm out. And, you know, just kind of almost this ugly breakup or something. Like, no, like, let's start kind of slowly kind of building this and cultivating this community, this culture where people could be able to kind of meet, gather, encourage one another. And I think in doing so, and if nothing else, it's just an opportunity for us to share our testimony of, like, well, why did we do this? Why did we do this in Steubenville? And the reason is, like, okay, you know, well, we felt led, and God called us to stay here and to build this. And so,
yeah,
like,
yeah, you have. So tell us your kind of slogan or really mantra you guys have. I mean, it's kind of everywhere and posted. It's,
yeah. So it's act justly, love kindly, serve humbly. And then we say, like, adventure out, but it's drafted off of Micah 6:8, you know, we call the divine requirements, right? He's told you, man, what God wants and what does he ask of you is to act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. I think, like, if we're going to build this community, or if we're going to be successful in the building this community, and we're defining success as not having this crazy successful business, again, where we're just making crazy amounts of money, is there a community that's being built and cultivated that will, I think, be able to sustain itself when and after we're gone, right? Because we know that this is not, like, a forever thing. We know that this is temporary. We don't know, like, necessarily what that looks like, but, like, are we able to do that and even pass that on, right? This discipleship mindset to our kids, to be able to do what we're doing with our community, what we're doing with our with the outdoors, and really, so that's our mantra. But our mission right now, our mission is to diversify the outdoors through the outdoor industry. And kind of that started once we realized we were the first Black owned outdoor shops. Because again, I started with a business partner. So that was not our purpose, or at least, you know, that's not what we thought it was. As we've evolved, as we've grown, and, you know, as we've ourselves evolved, as we've had kids, like, we're seeing, like, wow, like, we have an opportunity here to really change this in a way that's never been done before, never been changed before. Mm. The difficulty with that is there's not, like, a blueprint either. Like, we're the first ones. So, like, that also means that we make those mistakes and we'll have to pay for those mistakes. But hopefully what our prayer and hope is that, like, we can kind of create this trail that then other people can come behind, other minority-owned businesses in the outdoors can come behind and figure out ways to be successful and impact their community.
Man, that is a big vision, and that is just unbelievable. And really, you've done that on, I mean, just from, I was just thinking through just the last 4 years with SPO and what y'all have done, even just to start the community building activities. Y'all have done so much. And really, I want to kind of talk about a little bit of social media, just the engagement and tribe building. I mean, it's been incredible, like, the really success y'all have had in that. But tell us a little bit about some of the activities you've done over the years, and just to start building in that community. And we were talking before the show of one you did last night.
Yeah. But
So tell us, and really that's led to a lot of success. Mm. I mean, just as far as like building awareness of you guys and followers and like a community, it yeah. may not have translated into immediate product sales, but you're doing it with a bigger picture in your mind.
Right. Right. Yeah. You know, I think because Stephenville, Stephenville, Texas, it's known as the cowboy capital of the world. So like you don't really hear, or when you think about Stephenville, you don't think of, you know, outdoors, you don't think of camping, you don't think of gravel riding or mountain biking, fly fishing, that sort of thing. It's there, but that's just not something that you think when you hear that. So I think because you don't think, when you think of that, when you hear that, those options and opportunities aren't readily available. So for our events, it was kind of, again, like with how we want to do things, we want to engage our community, we want to educate our community, we want to provide access for our community. And so engaging is all about having these events. Some of these events are outdoor themed, you know, and outdoor centered. Some of them aren't. And it's just to get people, again, in community outdoors. And then it's like, or in community. And then once they're in community, then it's like, hey, why don't you go on this hike with me? Why don't you go on this bike ride with me? So we've had events from Coffee 101. I think that was probably one of the most impactful ones for me. I remember there's a guy that came up and we had promoted it all around into like, I think it was like a $5 cover. Cause we want people to kind of to have some sort of investment to honestly to increase the likelihood of them showing up. And this guy came up and this guy was just, he was just kind of acting kind of socially awkward. And I think just he just looked like he wasn't comfortable. I'm pretty outgoing. Hey man, what's up? Glad you came. And just kind of told him what we're about and like, you know, hey, you can pay this way or that way. And he's like, oh, well, I actually didn't know that there was a charge or anything like that. And it's like, oh, I said, okay, well, man, since you're here, come on in, you know, I'm not going to turn him away. And he said, oh, cool. He said, like, truth be told, I don't get out of my house much. And like that just hit me and impacted me to think like, what? This dude just came, didn't know me, came up, told me he doesn't get out of his house much, but we had an event about coffee. And whether he was that passionate about it or whether it was an interest or whatever it was enough that brought him out of his house to come up to a place he'd never been before, talk to people he'd never been around before. And like, I just like that just sat with me all throughout the night. And I would just take kind of these mental snapshots of that guy. And at first he very standoffish. I was like, okay, I definitely need to be intentional with him and just make sure he like, you know, he's talked to, he's spoken to. And so I think it's something I'm talented in is kind of conversation starter. So I went over, started talking with him and grabbed a couple other people and kind of had this group conversation. By the end of the night, he's enjoying himself. And I think like, that's really kind of cool. It's like, okay, that's what we're going to do. I don't know if that guy's ever showed up again, but like that moment really impacted me. We also do community yoga events. We do a community bike ride, Slim Saturday pedal. We do fly fishing 101. We'll do, honestly, like we have these community groups or these community events, and they're led by community members in these community groups because community is such a big part. Now, it's not just because I like to say community a lot because of what I just said that like five times. But the the thought is this. If we have a local community member, well, the thought is this. I always said, I want to learn about things from people who are passionate about those things. So we can find community members who are passionate about things. We already have the shop. And so we have a platform that we can kind of allow them to step on and kind of talk about their passions. And if we can get a crowd there for them to talk to, well, then my thought is this, even if you're not really, you say you show up to yoga, you do it, you try to do it, you get through it, it's whatever. Well, if it's led by a community member, you're probably going to see them at a gas station, at a post office, at the grocery store, somewhere else. And like, hopefully there's some sort of connection, some sort of intimacy that happened that like, you can then start that conversation. Hey, oh, didn't I see you lead this? Hey, you know what? I mean, that was my first time, you know, I wasn't really good at it, but I did have a question about it. Like how would I start this at my home? Or like, when are you going to do that again? Again, I think it validates that person leading that community group, but it also validates the people showing up to it that like, hey, you could be here one day. And I think also, and I say like, to, or I always ask, like, I want to learn about, I like to learn about things. I like to learn about people's passions. And if I can figure out a way that we can incorporate that into Slimpings Outfitters, it doesn't have to make sense. We have a platform. I think it'll make sense to those that it makes sense to. And I think it'll connect to those that it needs to connect to. So we do kind of like, it doesn't have to be outdoor themed, because I think the end result is getting people in the outdoors. Well, we do, like, we sometimes we have record nights, vinyl Wednesdays, so we just spend vinyl in the shop and invite people to come in, bring their record collections, and we'll put it on the shop where they just kind of hang out. Again, let's make a connection somewhere, and then along the way, let's invite them to the outdoors, because that's how it was done with me. You know, it wasn't, I actually kind of swore off the outdoors. I was in Boy Scouts. It sucked. I hated it. It was not beneficial for me, my success. It was detrimental, in fact. It was one of the first places I experienced racism. I was not for it at all. And because of that, I swore off the outdoors, because I was like, okay, well, that must be what the outdoors is like. It's not that at all. So it's interesting, because that was a place that I experienced trauma. Now it's a place that has definitely become my safe place. When I get stressed out or whatever, like, I'm not going to a bar, I'm not going to play video games, not going to any of this stuff. Like, in fact, my wife was like, "Babe, when's the last time you went fly fishing? That's awesome. I'll go for, just go for a walk with my kids and Bill Murray, who's our basset hound."
Man, I love the lane that you're creating. I mean, and just to encourage you, you're doing it. I mean, you're doing that. It's just that seems like a long, slow, you know, hill of a process. But just hearing you explain that, just in the bigger vision of going from person to the platform, whatever connection that is, to ultimately getting them outdoors and helping change their lives. That's a big mission, and that's a life changer. So thanks for explaining it the way you did.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks for the encouragement. I need to remind that, like, this is, you know, this is the long game that we're playing. And you know, it's, you're even talking about social media, it's difficult to always be mindful of that. You know, you're inundated with all this stuff of coming across your screen, across your face, of instant gratification, or, like, you know, Uber success, and all these things. And you have to kind of fight against, like, do my values align with, like, what that looks like? Because if it's not, like, I need to see what I value success as and go from there.
Well, we only have a few more minutes, unfortunately, but I wanted to ask you, tell us a little bit about the products that you sell, where people can connect with you and Slims, and just kind of follow and get involved in one of these community deals.
Yeah. So we focus on a lot of footwear, apparel, and we're slowly building an outdoor gear. And also with that, we have, again, we are four local merchants. We're four local brands. In fact, we kind of have this section called the Local Natives, where we intentionally partner with local brands. And when I say local, because especially at the last year and a half, 2 years, right? Like, local now is kind of the state of mind. It's a mindset. So we say either local in proximity or state of mind, but these smaller brands that are really showing some, like, having just really dope graphics, really dope concepts and gear, or headwear, whatever that is, accessories, we will intentionally have a portion of our business that we intentionally invest into bringing their stuff in. And then we'll kind of complement more like the national brands out. Because here's the reality, you could go and get any, at least any national brand, right? Whether it's Patagonia, Osprey, On Running, Hoka, whatever, you can go get that stuff online. Why are you coming necessarily to SPO? And so I think it's like, we want to create this unique retail experience. We want to make a connection. We want to have a relationship, build a relationship with you, so that I think you're investing in us, not so much the gear. You can go and invest the gear with a click, and what, 2 days, it could be there to your doorstep, with Amazon or any of these other ones. But like, what we're trying to create is a sense of this community, a sense of, I think, a local responsibility and reinvesting in that community, wherever you're at. And so, because I think if you do that wherever you're at, then even think about it. When you travel, you're going to start doing that. Again, respect the locals. Like when I go to somewhere else, like where are some of these local joints, these local restaurants, these local eateries, these local shops I can go and support. So we intensely kind of do that. And then you can follow us at SP Outfitter. That's SP Outfitter at on Instagram, on Facebook, or slimpickensoutfitters.com. I think really right now we're kind of trying to figure out how we can create more engagement. I think kind of virtually, because again, after the last year and a half, how do we do that? We want to still be able to connect people and still be able to create and cultivate community, even when you can't necessarily do that in person, face to face. So like we just had our first backpacking event, bikepacking event, which is just camping on your bike with this guy who's became really, really fast friends, Brandon Weaver, and we streamed it online. And so like it, the stuff, again, this is someone I met in a shop who's passionate about this one thing, and we were able to figure out a way to for us to be able to kind of promote the things he's passionate about through our platform. And I think we were just seeing it the other day, and it's had like over 1,000 views, which is, that's good. We didn't know what to expect. We only had one person in attendance, but we've had over 1,000 views online. So I'll take that because I want people to, again, learn about these things so they can make these educated decisions and investments into these outdoor recreational activities and sports. But ultimately what that's doing is, I mean, it's creating conservationists, right? Mm-hmm. The more people outside, the likelihood of those people falling in love with the outdoors. And when they fall in love with the outdoors, the more people that are going to want to, hey, this is great. How can I preserve this? How can I protect this for the next generation? So like our thing is we want to do that while intentionally also wanting to diversify who we're exposing the outdoors to and making the outdoors accessible to, because yeah, it's that same thing. When I went to the farm in Florida with my grandpa, he's the one who showed me the love for the land. He's the one who showed me how to protect the animals. He's the one who did that. And then I went to Miami with my grandma. She's the one who told me like the difference and the importance of quality with fabrics, of having quality material, of the longevity of things that can happen. And so like, you know, when you think about it, or when I explain it, it might not make sense, but when I think about it, I just kind of see this common thread. I think definitely common thread of grace, right? God was intentionally weaving all these things, all these kind of tapestries into the story that he, and this trajectory that he's had me on. And so it's been an adventure, something that we just kicked off, because it was actually my first business. I was still in college, was Slim Pigs Vintage. I had a vintage store out of my dorm room. I'd have people come to my dorm room, and I'd style them, whether it's date nights or whatever. And then I'd go out, and I'd shop for like sneakers. I was a sneakerhead. So like I shop for sneakers, even if they weren't in my size, because I had friends that had different size feet. So I was like, why not? And so like now we've just figured out a way to how to incorporate that. So now we have like Slim Pickens Vintage inside Slim Pickens Outfitters, and it's really started to grow. But then even on top of that, program we're calling Slim Swap, which is kind of a gear swap program that makes, because it's outdoor gear. A lot of the stuff, I mean, it requires an investment. It's not cheaply made. But because it's not cheaply made means that it has these second, third, fourth, fifth lives. So like, well, let's take it in. Let's patch it up where it needs to be patched up. And then let's put it back on the shelf to sell. And in hopes of that, again, we've makes it more accessible and more approachable in the way of a price point for people to be exposed to the outdoors. And then some of the stuff we can just give away. So it's been a blessing.
I love what you're doing, Jamaica, what you're doing on there. I mean, it's just incredible, all the different facets of it. Well, I don't think I should end without, I want people to know also about the documentary. So let's talk about it for a second. Which has had, I don't know, was it thousands and thousands of views? So you had a film crew come in and make a documentary about you and your family, right? Like what was that experience like?
It was honestly, man, it was it was such a God thing. And I'm forgetting the scripture right now, but it talks about, is there any encouragement from belonging to Christ, any comfort in his love, and any fellowship in the Spirit? That was a moment that we needed all of that to the nth degree. We needed encouragement from belonging to Christ. We needed comfort in his love. We needed fellowship in the Spirit. We were about to close our doors. Mm-hmm. It was almost just kind of like time. It just wasn't, we weren't turning what we needed to turn in the way that we needed to do it. And the numbers just weren't adding up. And we got reached out by shout outs to Wonder Camp and Justin Jeffers and Abdul Kasamali that reached out and said, hey, and this was in partnership with the Outbound Collective. Like, we want to come and do this film about you. And yeah, we didn't get those emails. We've all gotten those like scam emails from princes and like, you know, right. Africa and the Middle East and all, and India and all that stuff. So like, I don't know. You're just kind of like on edge of like, this is not a real thing. But he wasn't a prince. So I was like, okay, I'll entertain the thought. So, and it really was, I told Heather about it, my wife, and she's like, oh, that's interesting, because none of us thought it was come to fruition. And then she was like, Greg was like, hey man, got everything set, flights booked, and like, we'll see you here like next week. And we're kind of like, wait, what? Like, because this is in the middle of the pandemic, and they're from Seattle, and all of these things that were going against it. And I even said like, hey, this is great, just to let you know, we might not be like, by the time you get here, we might not be here. So like, I just wanted to be upfront with them. And it was such an awesome time for us to be encouraged, but hopefully for us to encourage them as well. One of the things is, you know, like when we have a conversation and definitely if it's long enough, Christ is going to come up in my conversation, because he's just a part of who I am. And so in those conversations, we kind of got to see where those people were at. And not all of them are where we're at, and that's totally fine. And like, what a great opportunity, not only us for us to love on them, but like, they breathe life into us, man. Like that was, we had specifically prayed, and we've been praying for all of last year, that God would send people that he had inspired with skill. I remember the passage in Exodus, which says God sent Moses Bezalel, who he inspired with skill, craftsmanship, and all types of, or I think skill, work, and all kinds of craftsmanship. So I was like, that was just our prayer for a year. God, if this is going to work, if this is going to be able to survive, we need you to send us people that you've inspired with skill, that you've inspired with these passions, that you've inspired with these talents, because we couldn't do it. So he did, and he did abundantly more than we think or imagine. And, you know, I think it's a really good film. You know, kind of talks about some of the struggles, there in Steamville, kind of talks about some of the struggles within the outdoor industry as what we're trying to do with me and my wife and our mixed family. And I think kind of the implications that might have, but also the trajectory that we're trying to change. And the cool thing is we're doing it from Steamville. So, you know, it's still, we can put our local community on the map. And so that's kind of been that has been cool. It's been a lot. It's been different. I never thought we'd have this many eyes on us. I think we hit 30,000 followers. I think it was maybe yesterday, day before yesterday, and continuing to grow. So I think something that one of my reps told me, and he's also been a consultant with us, like, you need to realize that, like, now you're local on a national level.
Yeah.
People, now that they hear the story, they want to invest, they want to support. You need to make sure that you can give them opportunities to do that. Because they want to contribute. They want to contribute they want to invest in you. And so, like, we just want to provide opportunities. We're grateful for it. To everyone out there that who might be listening to this, like, you are definitely an answered prayer. Because we prayed fervently for a year. For people that would want to support us, and it was because, and I want to say, it doesn't mean that we didn't have support. It was like, just the support we were getting, and you were talking about a struggle earlier, but being realistic, like, it just wasn't enough. Like, what we're trying to do, it just, the support that we were getting, because we were getting support, it just wasn't enough.
Yeah.
And so now there's this national and even international outpouring of it. So
Yeah, it's amazing to see. Where can they find the documentary, Jamaica?
So you can go to our website, slimpickensoutfitters.com, and it's there. You can also just go to YouTube and type in Slim Pickens, and that's S-L-I-M-P-I-C-K-I-N-S. Okay. So type that in. You'll see probably Slim Pickens, the actor from Blazing Saddles.
Yeah.
That's one of my top five movies. We'll be in there. So yeah.
Okay. Well, Jamaica, keep doing what you're doing. Thank you for making time today. And I feel like you're building community on a little bit of a nation level now. So it's going to be fun to watch, to see what the Lord has for you. So thanks for making time today.
Oh, again, thanks so much for your time, your talents and your efforts. Again, just you doing this is an answer prayer that he's bringing people he's inspired with talent and skill for us. So thank you.
Thanks, Jamaica.
Hey, this is Micah. Me and Josh would like to thank you for joining us in the Story Field today. We hope you've enjoyed our discussion, and to learn more about us and the Story Field, visit thestoryfield.com. This podcast is sponsored by The Allen Firm, legal guides for many of life's situations. To learn more about The Allen Firm, visit allenlawfirm.com. Have a blessed day, week, and year, and we will see you next time on The Story Field.
This is Josh again. I just wanted to thank you for listening and let you know that this podcast is really about hope and about giving you hope for your life. So if you're listening and you're in a place where you're really feeling hopeless right now, or if you do not know Jesus, we have some great news to share with you and would love a chance to pray for you. Email us at hope@allenlawfirm.com. That's hope@allenlawfirm.com, and we'll reach out to you soon. Thank you for listening. God bless you.